listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And, well, let's see. Congress is meeting right now to, as quickly as possible, throw money at President Obama and an attempt to do something about ISIS. Tom Friedman, the inventor of the famous Friedman Unit, right? He used to say, just give it another 6 months and Iraq will resolve itself. And so 6 months became a Friedman Unit. About once every Friedman Unit, Tom Friedman says something that actually makes sense. And he has an op-ed in today's New York Times that is actually fairly profound. And I want to talk about that. What if we just did nothing? And, you know, actually is a serious strategy. So we'll get that to that as we go through the program today. Also, the Canadians now. The Canadian government is officially warning their people about driving through the United States. Why? Because our police, since this Reagan-era idea of cops being able to seize your goods and keep them and roll that money into the police department, if there's any crime involved, and only one out of six people who are even wrongly have their money taken from them. I mean, they literally will take the money out of your wallet or have your car taken. This is over $2 billion last year that our police stole from us as we drove through their towns. The Canadians are saying, hey, look out. You think speed traps in the old South were a problem? This is on steroids. And then on top of that, of course, there are the continuous Republican culture wars. You could say that they're an attempt to get us to ignore the fact that the Republicans haven't extended long-term unemployment insurance, that they refused to act on the Senate bill that was passed by the Senate to strengthen our southern border and to do long-term immigration reform. Many things that the Republicans are just refusing to do. But on the other hand, this is becoming, you know, particularly in many of the red states, in fact, Texas is thinking about they're planning on rewriting their textbooks to include creationism. Let's get religion into science. Eric Hovind is with us. He's the president of Creation Today. CreationToday.org is the website. Eric, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me again. I appreciate it.
Sure. We've got this guy with a beard who went on television and said, if you can't convert them, kill them. And, you know, it was Phil Robertson of Duck Dynasty and talking about Muslims.
And are you saying we shouldn't kill them if they come and attack us? Is that what you're saying? We shouldn't?
I'm saying if you can't convert them, you shouldn't kill them. No.
Come over and kill us?
Yeah, so you agree with Phil Robertson, and you agree with ISIS that if somebody doesn't want to convert to your religion, you should kill them?
No, I think you're taking Phil Robertson out of context. Basically, he was saying you can either convert them or they're going to try to kill you and you need to defend yourself. Are you saying that we should not, as a nation, defend ourselves? Is that what you're saying?
No, you are misstating Phil Robertson. He said.
Oh, no, he went on to clarify very clearly. He said, look, your choice is either convert them or they are going to try to kill you because that's what the Quran commands them to do.
But he's wrong. They're not. They have no interest in coming over here.
I wonder what hole you're living in, Tom. Surely
I'm listening to the Central Intelligence Agency, and I have some confidence in them. Here's what Phil Robertson said, just for the record. Here he is.
In this case, you either have to convert them, which I think would be next to impossible. I'm not giving up on them, but I'm just saying either convert them or kill them, one or the other.
Yeah, and then Hannity said, wait a minute, did you really say that? And he said, yeah, basically, yeah, that's what
I said. So are you against the government going after ISIS? Are you against that?
Yeah, as a matter of fact. If you want more than a one-word answer, I think the Saudi Arabia, Turkey, you've got a number of Sunni governments in that region, and they're all just sitting back and letting us pay for the cost of it and take the bloodshed, and I think that's stupid.
But I think you ought to argue with Bill Maher on that. Bill Maher himself said, come on, you guys, Islam is doing this. We know what's going on. It's okay to defend ourselves. They're the ones. It's not like Christianity. Bill Maher is the one who said the vast number of Christians don't believe that if you leave the Christian religion, you should be killed for it. The vast numbers of Christians do not treat women as
sex. Is this how you argue creationism? You find one guy who says something that you agree with and suddenly that's it?
I mean, talk about the pot calling the kettle black. You're talking about one guy, Phil Robertson, and suddenly that's it. I mean, come on. Where's your common sense?
Well, I think it's fairly well intact. I think it's a mistake to involve ourselves in a civil war in a distant country that's basically a civil war based on religion. I think it's
a
mistake.
Now, that's a totally different question. What Phil Robertson is saying is, should we defend ourselves?
No,
absolutely.
He's not saying that. He's saying if they won't convert to Christianity, you kill them.
No Christian says that.
You're saying that we should be teaching evolution in our classroom. We should be teaching creationism in our classroom along with evolution. And I'm wondering why you are not also advocating for teaching astrology along with astronomy and for teaching alchemy along with chemistry.
Last time I was on your program, I don't know if you remember it or not, but no, that is not what I claimed. I said in science class, we should teach science. That makes sense. The evolution religion is not scientific. Nowhere,
it is absolutely
nowhere will
scientific.
You find everything coming from nothing, the Big Bang idea. Do you believe in the Big Bang?
The evolutionary, you know, in fact, the quote that you sent us from Stephen Jay Gould, this is a great example. He said, you know, we can't find some of these transition species. It's because Stephen Jay Gould's theory was one of punctuated equilibrium. There is a lack of evidence in some areas.
Darwin said, if evolution is true, we should find lots of evidence in the fossil record. They hadn't found
it.
So Stephen Jay Gould said, lack of evidence proves that it happened quickly. So there is no evidence that proves it happens.
Do you know what a bottleneck event is, Eric?
Say it again.
Do you know what a bottleneck event is?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's a fictitious thing, but yes.
Well, it was the basis of Stephen Jay Gould's theory, and it makes perfect sense. If you don't believe in that, then you must not worry about getting E. coli H147, the stuff that can cause kidney failure and kill you, because it was the result of a bottleneck event produced by the presence of antibiotics.
And, Tom, if you don't believe in the creator that gave us moral laws, then you obviously can't believe in right and wrong. And, therefore, everything you say on your program about somebody doing something wrong is invalid because you don't believe in right and wrong.
So you don't believe in evolution, so you're going to ignore the possibility that any bacteria that could kill you might actually even exist, because the only way it could get that way is by virtue of evolution.
Now, that's the slippery slope, because I actually define in my talks what the word evolution means. The word evolution is a religious term talking about ape to man or molecule to man.
Evolution is a scientific term.
It's minor changes within a kind. It's not evolution. It's variation. It's horizontal changes, not vertical changes.
You're trying to change our language? I mean, you know, changing our textbooks isn't enough. You want to change our language, too?
I've got a textbook that gives four different definitions of evolution on the first two pages. It says evolution is change over time. Then it says evolution is a change in living things over time. Well, how did life come from non-life? Do you believe in abiogenesis, something that was disproven years ago? Do you believe that life came from non-life, Tom?
Beliefs are not of consequence here. What is of consequence is whether we're going to raise a generation of children who can be competent scientists, or whether we're going to raise a generation of children who are idiots because of religious ideologues like yourself.
Tom, look at what you're saying. You want your belief system that life came from non-life to be taught to all the kids in school.
I would like science to be taught in science class and comparative religion to be taught in comparative religion class.
So put your belief that life came from non-life, which is part of the evolution worldview.
I have not asserted that as my belief, Eric. You're putting words in my mouth.
You did just fine yourself.
All right. Eric Hovind, president of Creation Today. CreationToday.org is the website. You know, I will refrain from calling you the Christian Taliban, Eric. How's that?
Well, it's because I didn't know what to say. There
you go. Thanks for dropping by.
Thanks for having me on.
We'll talk to you. Sure. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So what do you think? Should we change our textbooks to say that Darwin was a religious theorist? Really? And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Cliff watching Free Speech TV in Canyon Country, California. Hey, Cliff, you wanted to weigh in on the Middle East?
Yeah, Tom, I just keep coming back to this one aspect concerning the whole situation. You know, it's our government's position to just continue to bomb and shoot and kill whatever enemy we perceive to be out there. But the one fundamental problem that's not really being recognized or acknowledged is the reality of this so-called enemy. You know, we all have different realities, Tom. And when the brain can get manipulated and brainwashed to the point that so many members of radical Islam believe that by strapping explosives to their body and blowing themselves up, they become martyrs. They go to heaven with 70 virgins or whatever. So the question remains, how do you threaten a group of people with violence and death when they're welcoming it? I mean, how can that be an effective strategy? You know, we're just taking the bait, and these weapon manufacturers and these defense contractors are going to be making millions of dollars because this is an intentional perpetual war. That's how I look at it.
I think a more important question, I don't disagree with your analysis, Cliff, but I think a more important question is predicated on the reality that ISIS is a Salafist, neo-Wahhabist, fundamentalist sect of Islam, okay? Wahhabism was started by good old Mr. Wahhab back in the 1740s, I think, and was ascendant for about 80 years in Saudi Arabia and then kind of went underground for a while in the 19th century and then came back with the modern Saudi family as oil was discovered. And the Saudis cut a deal with these guys. You know, we will let you promote Salafism, this fundamental version of Islam that now now that the schools have reopened in Mosul, they have banned the teaching of Darwin in their schools, apropos of our last guest. And you know, Saudi Arabia really is responsible for this theology, this ideology, and has been for 100 years. They are not willing to participate in any significant way in the battle against ISIS, in quotes. Turkey has, you know, doesn't want to go against ISIS. They've got, and yet they've got, you know, in part because they've got the problem of the Kurds in the south, and they consider the Kurds, you know, traitors and terrorists, and we're supporting the Kurds and the Kurds against that. You know, it's just a total mess. And I think that we should be letting people in the region step up. I think if we step back, they will step up because, you know, Saudi Arabia, the king of Saudi Arabia knows that if he doesn't do something, they're going to take down his government.
You know what, though, Tom? It's not just ISIS that are, you know, blowing themselves up. As you pointed out, before we invaded Iraq, there were no suicide bombers. But now you can't go a day without reading about this somewhere in the Middle East, not just in Iraq, but all over the whole region. It seems to be an effective tool to spread their word.
Message. But again, I'd say it's not my problem. Dropping humanitarian aid to Yazidis, cool. You know, I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
But I really think that the reason why ISIS, ISIL, whatever you want to call it, the reason why they have had as much success as they have had in both Iraq and in Syria, in large part, is because George Bush broke the region. But in smaller but significant part, has nothing to do with us. It has to do with the lack of action by Saudi Arabia. In fact, Saudi Arabia is tacitly supporting them, and we need to call them on this. Cliff, thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back. So I want to get back to this. There's some very interesting pieces of news here. This article by Tom Friedman, and, you know, I've almost made a living ridiculing Tom Friedman. I've taken pot shots at him in my books. I've written articles, joking about him. Every now and then, Thomas Friedman says something that's really, you know, profound and worth listening to. And the majority of the time, it's in my opinion, is gibberish. But he nailed this. Except at the very end, he goes, well, you know, I don't really know if I believe this or not. But, the question, he opens the op-ed piece. It's in today's New York Times. And it's titled, Take a Deep Breath, ISIS in the Arab World. As Republicans in the House of Representatives are getting ready to show how, you know, we're going to huff and puff and blow their house down. We're going to show how tough we are on bad guys. How dare they behead a couple of our people. You know, all this kind of stuff. And we just have to ask the question, if we're not in that region fighting against these crazy Sunnis, and that's not to say all Sunnis are crazy, but these particular ones are, if we're not fighting against them, would the rational Sunnis in the region be taking them on, because they would be the ones that would have to do it? Or would the Shia take them on? I mean, Assad is Shia, Iran is Shia, they're perfectly willing. I mean, we've been pretending not to coordinate with these guys, but I think it's time for us to just say, this is not our fight. You know, Dick Cheney wanted to sell the oil in Iraq, and he wanted Halliburton not to go bankrupt anymore. You know, he screwed us. He and George W. Bush killed a bunch of Americans, killed hundreds of thousands of Iraqis and Afghans, created somewhere between 5 and 8 million refugees, bombed two countries back to the Stone Age, covered one with so heavily Iraq with depleted uranium that their birth defect rate now is higher than any other country in the history of the world. I mean, we have just utterly destroyed a couple of countries. Isn't it time for us to say enough already? Yeah, we screwed up. Mosul, you know, the second largest city in Iraq, is under ISIS control. How long is that going to last? At a certain point, the people are going to say, enough already. You know, we've seen modernity. We know what the real world is like. We're sick and tired of our daughters not being able to go to school, of our women being locked up in the house, of the morality police chasing us around, of alcohol and music and dancing and photographs being banned. You know, England went through this with Cromwell. It's not like we don't know how this movie ends. Right? The British said, bring back the damn king. He was an SOB, but at least he was our SOB. And send Cromwell and his buddies, the Puritans and the Pilgrims, over to Massachusetts. Let them do their damage there. And boy, did they. We're still suffering from that. But this is not our fight. We don't, you know, the United States does not have any official position on whether it's, you know, Ali or what's his name? I'm sorry, Ali is the godfather of the Shia. I forget who the Sunni is. But it's, you know, whether it's Mohammed's, what, son-in-law, or whether it's his mentee, this is not our battle. Any more than when Jefferson, you know, was running for president in 1800 and he said, you know, the Congregationalists and the Presbyterians are both hoping that I'll pick one of them as the official religion of America. But they're both wrong, because I've sworn on the altar of eternal God hostility over any form of tyranny over the minds of men. I mean, he was taking on the priests. He called them the Vedas irritable, the genus irritable Vedum. The species, the genus of cranky priests. This is what we have in the Middle East. Why is it our job to resolve this problem? Now, you can build a case that we spent trillions of dollars destroying a country, and that country is a wreck right now. But I don't think the solution is for us to go in and say, ha, ta-da, here's the Americans, we're going to rebuild your country. No, we should do it like we did with the Marshall Plan in Europe. We should say, here's some money, why don't you build cement factories? Why don't you build steel factories? Why don't you build road paving factories? Put your own people back to work building your own country. And a lot of this money is going to be gifts, because after all, we screwed it up to begin with. Some of it will be loans. You can pay us back when you can get around to it. The only catch on this is that you have to allow women to have equal status in society with men. And if you don't want that, fine. Come back in 200 years. But in the cities that ISIS has taken over, it's, you know, just like in Saudi Arabia, other than the morality police going around with whips, it's pretty stable. Let's just butt the hell out. That's Why is it our job to fight Saudi Arabia and Turkey's war? Even if, maybe we imposed it on them, but if Saudi Arabia hadn't helped 9/11...
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Which takes us back to the 28 pages that the Bush administration redacted about all the Saudi help to the 9/11 guys. If that hadn't happened, if we hadn't had... None of this would have happened. It's the good, the bad, and the very, very Jim Percutely ugly. The good. Obamacare. The evidence in favor of health reform just keeps rolling in. According to a new report from the CDC, the nation's uninsured rate, that is the percentage of the population that does not have health insurance, is now at the lowest it's been since the 1990s. The CDC's report, which only looked at the first 3 months of 2014, found that the uninsured rate dropped from 14.4% at the end of last year to 13.1% at the beginning of this year. Since many people signed up for Obamacare after the time frame of the CDC studies, these numbers are almost certainly an underestimate. They do clearly show that health care reform, despite what you might hear over at Fox so-called news, is working. And that's a very good thing. The bad. Chick-fil-A. The restaurant chain is under fire in the wake of accusations from one Denver-based employee that her boss demoted her after she had a double mastectomy. Daphne Richards, the employee making the accusations, talked to ABC News Denver about her story, telling a reporter that the changes in her work schedule started right after she came back from surgery.
I no longer have a full-time management position for you, and you will no longer have health care benefits after September.
Did she say why?
She said something about reconstructing or reconfiguring the business.
Daphne's documents show not only was she being demoted, she was going from 40-plus hours a week to 15, from $14 an hour to 10.
I'm receiving my bills now from my surgery. They're astronomical. And I'm wondering, is this raising her premiums? Is she worried about the future surgeries?
Wow. I thought Chick-fil-A was supposed to be a Christian company, but religious values and general human decency apparently aren't as important as making a few bucks for the rich stockholders. And the very, very ugly, Rush Limbaugh. During his radio show Monday, Rush mocked Ohio State University's new policies designed to prevent sexual assault, asking his viewers whether they've noticed that, when it comes to women, sometimes no means yes. Seriously, check it out.
Consent must be freely given, can be withdrawn any time, and the absence of no does not mean yes. How many of you guys, in your own experience with women, have learned that no means yes if you know how to spot it?
Great. You'd think that the whole Sandra Fluck controversy would make Rush think twice about what he says about sex and gender issues, but I guess not. It's just very, very ugly. Okay, as Congress is preparing to spend billions, 10, 20, 50, who God only knows how much, billion dollars to defeat ISIS, the UN is saying, we got this Ebola problem, and we need $1 billion. Will anybody pony up? Congress is not debating that today. Ebola is actually killing people. I mean, I realize ISIS has killed a few people, too, but ISIS is going to find it, frankly, a lot harder to hop on a plane, come to the United States, and kill a lot of people than Ebola would. Have we learned nothing from the Spanish flu? I mean, it's like, I know this is not airborne, but still, this is serious stuff. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind?
Morning, Tom. I have to respond to your guest.
Our creationist, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Almost everything he said was incorrect, but he puts it out there as an assertion. Let me just start with a couple things, and I'll get to my point here. He said that Darwin said if evolution is true, there should be lots of evidence in the fossil record. That's not what Darwin said. In chapters 14 and 15 of Origin of Species, Darwin, in fact, says the fossil record is incomplete. Lots of things are missing.
Right.
He explicitly says that.
Right.
And so I have a brother that's like this guy. He just throws things out there, right, and asserts that that's what Darwin said. I've read Origin of Species and Darwin's autobiography within the last year. So And I have a degree in bioscience from Michigan State. So I think I'm qualified to talk on that part of it.
Did you ever read The Descent of Man?
I'm sorry?
Have you read The Descent of Man by Charles Darwin?
I have not read that.
That is the most fascinating of his works. Let me commend that to you, Paul. There are parts of it that are so not politically correct today, but there are other parts of it that are just really thought-provoking. But anyhow, back to you.
Yeah. Well, and then he says, he makes another thing. Well, the conservatives always like to say, are you saying this? Are you saying that? And what they'll do is throw back at you a twisted version of what you just said, right?
And
ask you to say yes or no. They're going to give you the Socratic, sort of Socratic method with you,
right,
and ask you to yay or nay on a twisted version of what you just said. But then he said, molecule to man? Really? And then he says, but I just thought, well, wait a minute. Doesn't it say in Genesis that God created Adam from the dust of the earth, non-living to living? Okay, so what are we made of? We're made of the elements, right? On the periodic table, right?
Yeah.
Well, none of those are necessarily living. So, yeah, we are made from non-living things. Now, at some point, if you want to philosophically go back and say the way DNA came together, the way it all came together is part of the, you know, you can call that God philosophically.
Yeah.
But at some point, why is natural selection and evolution anti-God?
Well, it's not. And I didn't want to get into this into a theological debate with a person whose theology is as limited as Eric's is. And I say that respectfully. I mean, he's got a very narrow view of theology, and he's staying to it. And that works for some people. But frankly, I would disagree with the statement that we're made out of non-living things. I think individual elements, you know, we now know that even subatomic particles, quarks and mesons, but, you know, clearly electrons, protons, neutrons, and even more clearly atoms and molecules are singing. These things are moved. They're in constant motion. They are dynamic. I think that they are living. I realize if you're using the definition of living, like, you know, it absorbs nutrients and excretes waste and, you know, and that kind of thing, maybe you couldn't call them living. But I think that my personal theology is that everything in the entire universe, all of creation, is imbued with intelligence, that it is all part of the same stuff. And
the elements have an affinity to combine with one another.
Yes, of course.
Right? The elements will never just sit separately.
Well, it depends on the element. I mean, you know, some of your noble elements like gold are less likely to do that. But you put iron in the presence of oxygen, boom, you got rust.
Right. Well, let me put it just to finish off here. I would actually agree and say, okay, let's teach creationism along with evolution or natural selection. But see, what he means by teach is not what I mean. What I mean is critical analysis.
Right.
Let's put them alongside one another and analyze them. What he means by teach is to advocate. And what he wants to do is advocate teaching his style of teaching creationism versus his style of
what the Texas school board is talking about putting in next year's school books, which will go out to the entire United States because Texas is the largest purchaser.
Exactly.
It is getting bizarre. Paul, thank you for the call. Well, as always, well said, brilliantly said. George in Paso Robles, California. Hey, George, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I was hoping to ask this question to your guest. He's not there. Maybe a conservative can call in and explain to me why they don't believe in evolution, but they preach social Darwinism.
Excellent point. I don't have an answer for that, George, so maybe somebody will call in, and some conservative can call in and answer it. Thanks, that was brilliant. William in Bakersfield, California. Hey, William.
I couldn't find a job, so I...
William? William, you are on the air. William's not listening to his phone. Margie in Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin. Hey, Margie, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Listen, I usually try not to wade into religious topics because I do believe that people have the right to believe what they choose. But one of the things that your guest said that just absolutely fired me up was that if you don't believe in God, you don't believe in right or wrong.
Right.
And that to me, and I'm sorry, many, many things in the Bible that they claim is what God did is pure evil. Let's start with Noah's flood. Let's start with condemning an entire population because somebody ate an apple.
Yeah. Turning Lot's wife to salt.
And to say that because I or anybody doesn't believe in that God and that Bible is incapable of knowing right from wrong, I'm sorry. That statement has to be challenged.
Yeah. Now, right and wrong are your dog knows the difference between right and wrong. You know, right and wrong are fundamental biological constructs that existed long before anybody ever heard the name Jesus or thought even about maybe there's only one God instead of multiple gods. And there is absolutely no evidence that lacking religion causes people to be less moral. In fact, I would argue that some of the people who are the most moral among us are the atheists and the agnostics among us, you know, because they have to seriously consider, you know, what is the context of my morality, as opposed to simply saying, I'll follow those Ten Commandments. I will stone my children to death if they speak back to me. Really? I'm with you, Margie. Very, very well said. Thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for listening to Sirius Satellite Radio there in Wisconsin. We will be back. It's 15 minutes before the hour. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And let me again just, you know, recommend to you, as much as it makes me grit my teeth to do it, Thomas Friedman's piece in today's New York Times. Take a deep breath. And welcome back, Corky in Hilton, New York. Hey, Corky, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. What's up?
Yeah, I'm getting a little tired of these guys saying you can't keep blaming it on Bush after 10 years. My mother died of cancer, and I still blame cancer for her death.
There you go.
And I still blame Bush and Cheney for the mess in the Middle East. They went in there, and they messed it all up. They stirred the whole pot.
Yep.
And now we're still there trying to straighten it out. Now, you're saying that the Saudis are backing it. Yeah. Well, the Saudis probably did back 9/11 because they wanted Bush to go in there and destroy Saddam Hussein. Because Hussein was threatening to dump oil on the market for $10 a barrel. And a Muslim can't kill another Muslim, supposedly, in the Quran. So I wouldn't doubt they backed the 9/11 so that the United States would attack Saddam Hussein to keep that oil in the ground. If you notice, when they went to Baghdad, they went right by Baghdad, right to the oil fields.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the oil ministry was the only government ministry that we secured when we took over Iraq. Everything else we said, we'll leave it to the free market. Right. A.K.A. looters.
Yeah, can't people understand that? What's wrong with them?
Yeah. No, it's a good point, Corky. You got a great point. Thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Bill in Jefferson, Georgia, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Not much. How you doing this morning, Tom?
I'm well. Thank you. Hope you are, too.
These Republicans wanting to start this war over there, I don't understand it. I mean, we got things that need to be taken care of here. We're fixing to put out a video that ought to blow their mind. It's called C-40 Cities. It's about C-40 City leadership.
Uh-huh.
It's the Aspen Institute videos. And this ought to throw them, this ought to make everybody's head spin. Maybe it's a treason deal about Brazil. You might be aware of it. I've been talking to Amy about it, and we've got these politicians rolling all over each other when we single one out and tell them about these C-40 cities. They tell us.
What is a C-40 city, Bill?
A C-40 city, they're talking about, it's a garden, rooftop garden city, you know, they all have been talking about.
Right.
What they're talking about doing is bringing in all these Mexicans, they call it, working poor and get rid of the non-productives, like they're talking about black people. And it's done by the EPA, by Rahi Aguilawala.
Bill, I think you've spent too much time over on Glenn Beck's
website. We got
Foley
up there. John Foley's the president of it. And it ought to be a pretty good video. It's C40 birth of a C-40 city. And you know what I'm talking about, Tom.
No, actually, I don't. This sounds crazy to me.
You are. Y'all are all in on it. You know
I'm in on it?
Yep, you sure are.
I'm in on part of a conspiracy to destroy black people and replace them with Mexican people?
It's sustainable development, world food supply. It started in 1977, and came to 95, and then we picked it up in 2012.
What's wrong with sustainable development, Bill?
Because of what they're talking about doing. Making these C-40 cities, and the EPA is running people. They're going after the Cattlemen's Association.
This is really important for you to hear. Just because something's on the internet doesn't mean it's true. You really need to think critically about this. I guess that's all I can say. Bill, thank you for the call. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Harmon here with you. Matt in Atlanta, Georgia, listening on Sirius XM. Hey, Matt, what's up?
Hey, I was just listening to the creationism versus,
versus science?
Sorry. Yeah. Versus science. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
I am actually a pastor in Atlanta, and I do not advocate for creationism being taught in schools because creationism takes faith. And I love faith. I have faith. I'm a proponent of faith. However, creationism doesn't take any kind of a scientific process into account. The book of Genesis was written to show us who created and why we were created, not how we were created.
Right.
That's all.
Right. Yeah, very, very well said, Matt. Very well said. Thank you for sharing that perspective with us. I think it's spot on. Jody in Lexington, Kentucky. Hey, Jody, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you doing?
Good.
So one of the things that most so-called Christians do not take into account is the conversation that took place between Cain and God after he killed Abel. He said, if you send me out there, they're going to kill me if they see me. He said, no, I'll put a mark on you so that whoever sees you won't kill you. Well, who is he talking about that's going to kill him? Not Adam or Eve.
Right.
There were people that existed outside of that little conclave.
Oh, of course. And I mean, look at Seth. Seth was the younger brother of Cain and Abel. And, he went off to the next town and found a wife. Well, so did Cain, for that matter.
No, that was Cain. Cain went to the land of Nod, where he took a wife. So, I mean, obviously, I think, to be honest with you, not only did they know that there was a civilization outside their group,
right,
they also knew that they were violent. And I think that may be where Cain learned how to murder.
Well, it could be. Dan Quinn has a really interesting interpretation on this. He suggests in his Ishmael novel that there's actually two creation stories in Genesis. There's two different versions of the Adam, Eve, Cain, Abel story. And but the basic message, he asserts that one of them was an older hunting gathering culture telling the story, and the other was a younger agriculturalist and pastoralist culture, because Cain was the farmer. He was the monocrop farmer, right? And Abel was the hunter and the pastoralist. You know, he herded animals and things and hunted. And Abel brought his food to God, and God said, oh, this is wonderful stuff. And Cain brought his food to God, and God said, no, this is not good. And Quinn says, all the evils of Western civilization began with the agricultural revolution, when somebody figured out that they could lock up the food. And that the Genesis is a warning against that. Don't engage in intensive agriculture. But, every society, every civilization, every culture, every tribe has a creation story that is their creation story. It's not anybody else's creation story. You know, the Japanese believe that the emperor was the long, long lineage. If you go all the way back, the very first emperor was, the incarnation of the sun god. That doesn't mean that there weren't people in China. It doesn't mean that there weren't other people around the world. Every culture has their own creation story. And the early early Jews were no different, and Christians have adopted that creation story, as have Muslims. But it's a creation story of one people. It's not a creation story of all of humans. And you're absolutely right, and you nailed it, Jody. Thank you. Jose in Chicago. Hey, Jose, what's up?
Hi. This guy that you were talking to, your guest, is the most, one of the most ignorant persons that I have heard.
Well, he's not here to defend himself. Let's not personalize this, okay?
You know, all those right wings, they contradict themselves. They talk about pro-life, and they want to go to war. They talk about conservatives. They are very conservative, and they want to spend billions of dollars of the taxpayers' money on war.
Right.
They talk about they use religion and God, yes, for political purposes.
Yeah.
They don't even believe that what they are saying. And now they're all the Republicans are using the fair, the same fair that they use to go to war in Iraq.
No, I agree with you, Jose. Well, you know, well said. Totally agree. Thanks a lot for the call. Nick in Morris, Illinois. Hey, Nick, what's up?
Not much. I just wanted to say that I disagreed with your guest, and I think he has a very limited view on evolution. I mean, if we look here in the Midwest, we see a speciation of that with the corn borer.
Mm-hmm.
They're using all the pesticides, and it's literally evolving in front of our eyes.
Right.
And if you look at AIDS in the past 30 years... You know, the same thing has happened. I mean, they've tried multiple different treatments of that.
Yep.
And as for macroevolution, I think if you maybe read Richard Leakey or looked at the work him and his wife did in Africa, he'd be able to see, how our species has come about.
Well, I think there's a broad notion within the fundamentalist religious community. Both ISIS and fundamentalist Christians, don't confuse me with facts. And well, you're talking about facts, Nick. That's dangerous stuff.
Yeah, you're right, Tom. All right. Well, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks a lot for the call. I find it fascinating that at the same time that fundamentalist Christians in the United States are saying, let's get Darwin out of our textbooks or at least balance him with creationism, ISIS, which just took over Mosul, they've got the second largest city in Iraq. It's time for the kids to go back to school. They're starting to go back to school. ISIS is going through the textbooks, and they're tearing out references to evolution from the textbooks. ISIS, fundamentalist Christians. ISIS, fundamentalist Christians. ISIS, what's the difference? You know, a few beheadings here and there. Okay, you know, I'll give you that. But and the fundamentalist Christians, I mean, you know, women should cover their heads, they should be quiet, they should sit in the back of the church. I mean, come on.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com. Your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And in the studio with me, I'm proud and pleased to have with me Steve Cobble. He is the co-founder of Progressive Democrats of America and associate fellow with the Institute for Policy Studies. PDAmerica.org is the website for one of the finest progressive groups in the United States, PDAmerica.org. And if you're not a member and you're not over on that website, go check it out. Hey, Steve, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Tom. Great to be here.
Great to have you with us. So you guys had your progressive roundtable, right?
Well, they're having it right now. I'm the most expendable member, and so they.
So you're here, stuck with us.
They sent me over to talk to you while the real smart guys are over.
So what's going on over there?
They're talking about the fair working family ideas that the Progressive Caucus wants to put forward from now on. The idea of fair economics that treats working families right.
Right.
The kind of thing we're unfortunately not spending enough time talking about to the voters. And, of course, the Republicans that run the Congress don't want to put that forward. So the Progressive Caucus has to push to get that out. Jim McGovern's supposed to be there today to discuss what's going on with what you've been talking about this morning, putting the arm in the rebels in Syria and whether we should have a congressional authorization vote and those kinds of issues, which are pretty hot today, as you know. And so they'll be talking about that. Steve Miles from Win Without War is there to tell us what's the latest on what's going on in the Hill. So it should be a pretty good meeting over there from 1 to 3. And then, so that's the events of today. And
these guys have done an incredibly good job, these ISIL guys, ISIS, Islamic State, whatever you call them, with their beheadings, pushing this out into social media, getting Americans all worked up. It's like, we're such suckers.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we're such suckers. George W. Bush merrily led us off to a $5 trillion war. You know, it's just, and now Obama looks like he's fixing to go down the same road. I mean,
one of the things that won Barack Obama his election was that he stood up 12 years ago now, next month, and said, I'm not against all wars, but I'm against stupid wars.
Right.
And a war where you're on both sides at once in Syria strikes most everybody as a stupid war.
Right.
And, I was listening. You were too, Tom. I was listening to him last week, and his optimistic scenario sounded horrible. I mean, so as I think it's MoveOn's put out these great graphics that say, so tell us how this ends. And, that's exactly right. Nobody has the slightest idea. This is we're doing something to do something. And, of course, when America does something, it usually has, missiles attached to it. And we think that's wrong.
So PD America, Progressive Democrats of America, PDAmerica.org, has chapters all over the country. If somebody goes to PDAmerica.org and signs up, what can they do?
What can they do? Well, the big project we're pushing right now is we're spearheading a draft Bernie Sanders for president campaign. We think 2016 we should have a debate.
Yep.
I can see the bumper sticker over your shoulder, so I suspect you kind of agree with this.
Sanders Warren, yeah.
Yeah, and Connor Boylan, who's the co-director of PDA, and I were in Wisconsin and Iowa this last weekend, where we went to Fighting Bob Fest in Wisconsin with about 5,000 Badgers, and Bernie was well received there. And then we went to two events in Iowa. Mm-hmm. And that and another one, which we didn't go to, three different cities, were all very well attended and received. And Bernie had a conversation about Citizens United and retirement security and minimum wage and living wages and whether we needed to spend money on infrastructure to rebuild the country and single-payer health care. And the crowd was very responsive and started telling him he should run for president without asking. So,
He should.
Yeah, well, we agree on that, and if any of your listeners agree, too, they can go to pdamerica.org and look for the button that says Draft Bernie and click on it and sign our petition keep pushing it. We handed out leaflets and sold bumper stickers for a dollar, and they were going fast. So
that's great.
I think it's.
Say Bernie for president?
They said, run, Bernie, run. Of course, we're Progressive Democrats of America. We want him to run as a Democrat.
Right.
He actually had a little discussion about that in Waterloo when a woman asked him point blank if he would run, and he had an open discussion with the crowd and then took a vote, and about 80% of the audience thought he should run as a Democrat. And
well, that gets him into the big debates. That gets him into a significant platform. Ross Perot was the last independent, I think John Anderson before him, who were able to participate in national debates. But Ross Perot basically bought his way into it. I mean, he's a billionaire. And John Anderson, I wasn't paying that much attention to politics that year.
They actually let him into a debate that ended up helping Reagan because Carter wouldn't show up if it was the other two. So they had a two-way debate.
Of Anderson and Reagan.
And Reagan did well, and it was only against John Anderson. It was kind of an interesting.
Yeah.
There were political decisions, who showed up and why.
Right.
And you're exactly right. Bernie has talked in, I think, the Progressive magazine. He had a discussion about, I was on the Jackson campaign in 88, Jackson for president, and Bernie Sanders was a supporter of ours and helped us carry the Vermont caucuses. And he's talked positively about what Jackson was able to do by running in the Democratic Party in 1988.
And in fact,
his issues on the agenda in a way that...
There are many people in the African-American community who would tell you, or at least some of the spokespeople that I know, the people who are more high-profile in the media, who have said to me, if Jesse Jackson had not run for president repeatedly, odds are Barack Obama would not be president.
I think that's right. And the other funny part about that is many of those high-profile African-Americans got assigned by their news organizations to the Jackson campaign, and at the time they thought it was sort of a throwaway assignment, and then it turned out to be the most interesting campaign of 1988, and they had the high-profile assignment. They had the assignment that the other guys wished they had, and they were able to move up in their careers by covering Jackson. Jesse tells the story that Barack Obama saw him at the Columbia debate in 84 with Hart and Mondale, which Jackson did very well at, and then Obama later told him that he realized at that point that this could be done. You could elect a black president.
Right.
And so you can imagine what started to go off in his mind as he watched Jesse.
Right. Here we are.
Do that. Yeah. There's a lot of reasons why that what you said is true. And I agree with it.
So what's Progressive Democrats of America doing in anticipation of the November elections? These are hugely consequential elections. If the Republicans take the Senate, it's going to be something like a small version of Apocalypse Now. And if they continue to hold on to the House, which is, I guess, a virtual certainty, even though the probably more Democrats will vote for Democrats than Republicans. But, if they do, that's a mess. What's PD America doing? We have just a minute left.
Yeah, the interesting dynamic, Selinda Lake was talking about this morning, is when things are all gridlocked and the economy's not working well, the people that are hit first are low propensity working class people who are low propensity voters. Less likely to vote. And when they get frustrated, they pull back because the system's not helping them, which is exactly what the Republicans want. So they gridlock it. So we got to get our folks out to vote and remind them that their frustration is due to obstruction. No matter how frustrated they are with the weakness of the Democratic Party.
It's due to Republican obstruction.
And sometimes Democratic weakness, but Democratic weakness can't do anything when the Republicans just say no and control one House. After November, they could control both.
Yeah.
And then all we'd be getting is scandal talk and
A lot of stupid legislation that the president would have to veto.
That's exactly. We hope he'd veto them. Yeah. And we wouldn't be able to confirm any judges.
Yeah.
And that would be a disaster given the way the courts behave, I know you know that. So
this
is a consequential
election.
The
Supreme Court may well be at stake.
Supreme Court, Ruth Ginsburg is elderly and she doesn't want to retire. And she's tough. She may last, but...
15 minutes past the hour. Steve Cobble. Hang on just a second, Steve.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Steve Cobble, the co-founder of Progressive Democrats of America, the website pdamerica.org. Get thee over there. Steve's got to get back to his round table. Steve, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Great to have you. And welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. And if I can make my mouse work, there we go. Ron, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV in Lake Manchi, California. Hey, Ron, what's on your mind today? You wanted to talk about evolution?
Oh, absolutely. This is the most important thing that actually ties all of the human race
together. And if we ignore, we become apathetic and ignorant of the facts, then we have nothing to actually look forward to. So we actually need to understand that we already actually have enough proof that the family of man is the family of man.
Yeah.
And it's been around for, well, we theorize 370 million years evolving. We have proof from this. The Discovery Channel puts out the most important things, just like you do. The Discovery Channel put out Artie and Ida. These are perfectly preserved females that we actually learned so much about human beings from, and nobody seems to talk about the fact that we now know that we actually live in the tops of trees, and we're really, really quite fascinating. We're a hybrid of Neanderthal and humans now. So I don't know why people don't just accept it and say, we're the family of man. Let's preserve man. Let's preserve our planet. Let's change. Let's get on with our lives, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. Well said, Ron. Thank you very much. Michael in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Michael, thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Yes, hi, Tom. You know, as always, a great show.
Thank you.
So much information that you put out. I almost forgot the points I was going to ask you just briefly here. I wanted to know if you've ever come across an author or a book or whatever that really kind of focuses in on historically the longest war that we've had on the planet, which is basically the war between the sexes,
yeah,
between the male and the female.
Gloria Steinem wrote a great book back in the 70s, as I recall. It's been a long time since I read it. There's some very, very good feminist literature out there, and there's some very good history of not just the feminist movement, but the anti-feminists, basically. But I, you know, off the top of my head, it's been at least a decade and maybe longer. I mean, the last time I really dug into that was in 96 when I was writing Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. That was almost 20 years ago. And I read several books on...
Which I've read.
Oh,
and
thank
it's
you.
A great book.
Thank
Tremendous.
You. And in preparation for that, I read several in to write specifically the chapter about population and how empowering women is the best way to reduce the world's population. You know, I read several books on that topic, and I can't remember off the top of my head any
right.
specific.
I probably run across the title of the book that you're mentioning here and everything, because I've looked into it. My son's taking women's studies at the college that he's going to now.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to go into law, and he thought that it would be very interesting and important in the
yeah.
times that we live to take a women's study course. The other thing I just want to briefly mention is you're talking about a couple of calls ago about how the universe, everything in the universe, has, if anything, a pulse to it.
Yeah.
Okay. Very true. My maternal grandfather, many, many years ago, first time he took me deer hunting, said to me, everything that's out here in nature, everything that's out, you know, right. in creation, universe.
It's all alive. Yeah, Michael, I'm sorry we're out of time, but thank you for the call. I guess I already said that. Ben in Wilmington, North Carolina. Hey, Ben, you wanted to talk about religion?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better, Ben. How about you?
It's an honor to speak with you. I've been listening to you for so many years, but I've never had the courage to call in, so here I am.
Well, great. So what's on your mind?
I think you're incredibly intelligent, and I actually agree with pretty much everything you have to say. And since we were talking about the religion versus evolution debate, I was raised by two educators completely without any religion in my life. And as I've gotten older and more learned about history and current events, it just boggles my mind the destruction and the warfare and the death and the famine and the torture that goes on in this world strictly based on difference of opinion and difference in faith. And in my opinion, difference in what fairy tale you believe in.
Mm.
And frankly, I think that if it's not global warming that destroys human beings, I think more likely it's going to be religion that completely obliterates the human race.
Yeah, well, religion has killed a lot of us. And people forget, you know, that even the Nazis were great promoters of religion. They had their own variation on Christianity. It's you're right. Religion is, I think it can be a fundamental force for good, but it also has been, in many cases, a profound force for evil, tragically.
Right. You very seldom hear the good stories, even if you look, you know, on the news, the more recently with the Catholic priests, or even just the random woman that kills her five children because God spoke to her.
Yeah.
Everybody's
well,
gotten it.
That's not so much religion as it is mental illness. But you know, I'm with you, and I think that, you know, we finally got a pope who's saying some good things, and you know, that makes me hopeful. But you know, and a lot of the Protestant religions are now ordaining women, and they're getting more egalitarian, and they're starting to become more social activists. The United Church of Christ is really growing, which is the most progressive of all the Protestant denominations, or one of the most progressive in the United States and around the world. So, I think that there's some good stuff going on with religion, but you're right, Ben, there's still a long way to go. Thanks a lot for the call. Chris in Beaufort, North Carolina. Hey, Chris, you wanted to talk about militarization of the police and ISIS? Chris, you are on the air? No, Chris is not listening to his telephone. Joe in Chicago. Hey, Joe, you want to talk about creationism and evolution?
Yes, I'll preference this because it's going to put a certain, I guess, hue on my comments. And that is, first of all, I'm an extreme believer. I don't see how people cannot believe in a God. But, you know, I mean, and I guess it goes for me, the fundamental crisis of essence of the belief is, if you believe when Abraham was tested by God, that God, even in killing, saying, "Will you kill your son?" is an atrocious thing. But if you believe in faith that God is ultimately and purely, completely all good, then whatever he says, whatever he does in his foresight of persons means that it is good. Having said that, I want to say that in science, I think it's really clear, and I don't see how there's even a discussion about creationism versus evolution, because creationism, when you teach science, you have to teach the tenets of science. One of the tenets of science is the model of experimentations. And that's not exclusively, but one of them is where you set up a hypothesis and then you test it and that kind of thing. And you can't do that with creationism. You could ultimately, you have to accept it on faith. Creationism should not be taught in science. Science is, has its own tenets, which have to be adhered to if you're going to be calling it science. Right. And I don't think that science in itself is, I think it's best when it is debated. So,
yeah, I'm totally with you, Joe. Very, very well said. I think religion should be taught. I think it should be taught in comparative religion classes. And, you know, so that people understand the various religions of the world, have a little more tolerance for others. And frankly, I think that causes people to strengthen the faith in their own religion, if they're inclined to have faith in their own religion.
God can be as dynamic as he wants to be. It's people who put limitations on God.
Yeah, well, in fact, we've even gone beyond a step beyond that. We've so anthropomorphized God. We've said, you know, there is a single male, he's got a penis, guy who is in charge of everything. And, I mean, we've killed off the goddess in our modern religions. And this guy has, you know, he's angry with us sometimes. He's happy with us sometimes. The Bible can be a really scary document. And I share your love of faith. I have deep faith myself. But it doesn't mean that science is bad. Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for listening to WCPT. We'll be back. It is 28 minutes past the hour.
listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So, back to this ISIS thing. What do you think about this idea of our doing nothing in the Middle East and saying to Saudi Arabia, you got a problem, take care of it? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Hey, just a quick mention, one night only, this Sunday night, Dan Sisson and I are going to be at Bus Boys and Poets telling you stories about and autographing the American Revolution of 1800, our new book. It's at the Bus Boys and Poets 5th and K Street location here in Washington, D.C. It'll be Sunday at 5 p.m. There's information on our website, tomhartman.com. And also, a friend of a friend, Sammy Youssef, September 26th at 8 p.m., is going to be performing at the Strathmore in North Bethesda, Maryland. This is a concert that benefits the Foundation for Traditional Studies and features music from his new album, The Center. And Sammy Youssef is pretty astounding stuff, some extraordinary music. You'll have a wonderful time. So that's what's coming up here in the near future. Leon in Heathsville, Virginia. Hey, Leon, what's on your mind? You wanted to talk about the American flag?
Yes, I'm a Korean and Vietnam era vet, and I think I have a right to say something. I used to highly respect the flag, but now when I look at it, I say, who owns this flag? And what I've thought of is we need a flag that shows the oligarchs like the Koch brothers and so on and so forth, yeah. Warren Buffett.
I've got a flag over at the TV studio that you can buy them online. I've seen them. Occupy used to use a lot of them, where every star has been replaced with a corporate logo and all shrunk down to the size of a star, but there's 50 corporate logos on there.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was thinking about.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, they're out there. You can track them down. In fact, I'm guessing if you just plugged, you know, corporate logo flag into a search engine, it would come up. But, Leon, great minds think alike. Someone got there ahead of you, but, I've seen them even. I saw one in Portland. I think the first place I ever saw it was in Portland. I saw one in somebody's window. So.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So they're out there.
I'm going to get one.
There you go. Leon, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. Sam in Ottawa, Canada, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. You wanted to weigh in on creation versus evolution?
Yeah. How you doing, Tom? First time, long time.
Thank you.
The point that a lot of people are missing, I hear people calling in and weighing in, but it's not like back when they were forming these religions today. I mean, science is only 400, 500, 600 years old, and it's not like they had a choice to choose between creationism or evolution back then. They had to fill in the gaps with something, so they came up with creationism and just to appease the masses, the way I see it. I mean, I'm baptized Catholic, and even I know the Catholic Church held back science, you know, for 400 years.
Yeah.
Who knows where we'd be now? But, it's not like they had a choice back then to choose either science or religion.
Well,
they
think that, you know, the easy analysis of this is that we are a curious creature who wants to know why, wants to know how, and perhaps most importantly, wants to be able to predict the future based on the past, based on an understanding of why and how. And sure. So our, you know, early religions, whether it was, you know, Thor, the thunder god, or, you know, the lotus growing out of, Shiva's belly button or whatever. I mean, you know, the earliest religions were attempts to explain the natural world in ways that made sense and that were consistent and that could be replicated. And so there were, you know, subtle things like the color of the sky at night would tell you what the next day was going to be like. And then they would build some, you know, that means that so-and-so sky god is in residence tonight, you know, or they opened the windows in the sky castle and, you know, princess so-and-so. I mean, I'm not talking about like going back to the old Greek religions and the
right.
Nordic religions and things. And as we learned more and more about how the natural world actually works, we started dropping these religions. I mean, I don't think anybody's worshiping Odin anymore, to the best of my knowledge, although, you know, my father's ancestors certainly did. And you know, we drop the religions that are demonstrably false, and we've hung on to the religions that were a little more vague about that kind of stuff, and we're really more about, you know, having a relationship with the spiritual, the supernatural, and you know, so science really fills in the place that religion once had, and that doesn't mean that it's a religion. It's, and for that matter, it doesn't mean that religion is science. But I think you're right. There is a correlation between the two.
Right. And I kind of think that it got to the point where most religion was local. No, I won't say locally based, but I mean at the time of Catholicism or Christianity and the rest of them, that they had the ability to go out in ships and whatnot, get to foreign lands where they could spread spread the word to the masses, like today's you know, mass media is now, and that's why the control is so.
Yeah, religion has historically also been an instrument of political control, and in fact, they use science to do that. I remember when I was living in Germany, and one Christmas, Herr Müller had found one of the tallest trees that he could find up way back in the forest near Stadtsteinach, and you know, we all walked back there Christmas Eve, and this is the Children's Community for Abused Kids. There was a bunch of kids there singing, and they had the horses and the sheep and the dogs and all. You know, it's just very beautiful and very idyllic. And afterwards, he was telling me how, you know, back 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, they've got these calendar stones like Stonehenge all over Europe. We've got them all over the northeastern United States. The priests knew what the shortest day of the year was, and they knew that the people were getting more and more nervous that the sun might be getting ready to go out. So on the shortest day of the year, which is basically December 23rd or 24th, they would find the biggest tree, and they'd set that sucker on fire at the highest point that they could find on the hill, light that tree up, and say, "I am reigniting the sun." And everybody would go, "Yeah, well, we'll see." And then the next day would be a little longer, and the day after that would be a little longer, and the day after that would be a little longer, and the people would go, "Whoa, he did it again." And he gets to be a priest for another year. And I mean, just one of 1,000 examples, but it's like, you know, religion has always used science and vice versa. So, Sam, thanks. Brilliant points. Wayne in Chicago. Hey, Wayne, you wanted to talk about the Pentagon? Wayne?
Hello?
Hey, Wayne, you're on the air.
Oh, I'm sorry, Tom.
But all right.
I have some information for you. Hold on to your seat, Tom.
Okay, I got it.
Hold on to your seat, because I don't know. But you've been around the block so many times, it probably won't even faze you. But I've been doing a little research myself, and I want to speak about what happened with General Zinni. You know, the conversation we had yesterday?
Yeah.
About him and Mr. King.
Yep.
Pushing for ground troops in Iraq. Okay, recently the Pentagon made a request for $2 billion to ramp up operations in Iraq, you know, supposedly to go after ISIS. Right. Now, part of that $2 billion request is an airplane called the F-35.
Which doesn't fly.
Right. The F-35 is not in operation. A few months ago, an engine caught fire, so they grounded the whole F-35 system, period.
Right.
So Pentagon knows that the F-35 is not in operation. It will not be used against ISIS in Iraq, in Afghanistan, anywhere.
Right.
It's also known for being notoriously over budget, perpetually delayed, and some experts call it the most expensive weapon system in human history, over $1 trillion.
Yeah.
Over $100 million per plane.
Right, and it's designed to fight the Soviet Union, which no longer exists.
Yeah, but anyway, General Zinni works for a defense contractor called BAE Systems.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, the usual suspects. Right. Now, BAE Systems is helping Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, Pratt and Whitney, helping them to build this F-35 plane. So BAE System has skin in the game directly, you know, with the Pentagon asking for this $2 billion,
right,
and trying to include the F-35 in the contract knowing that the F-35 is not even going to be used. So maybe that's one of the reasons why General Zinni was trying to, scream so much for ground troops in Iraq, you know, because he knew the Pentagon was going to put that $2 billion request in for this plane that's not even going to fly.
Well, and here's another thing to add to it. These, when they put this thing together, this F-35, they were really smart about it. There is an assembly factory helping build the F-35. There's one in all 435 congressional districts in the United States. Every single man or woman in the House of Representatives, and therefore, obviously, every senator, because it's in every state, has among their constituents people who are employees of either the company that's making the F-35 or one of the companies that's substantially making pieces for the F-35. And so if they vote against it, they will be accused by their adversaries, by their political opponents, as voting against jobs in their own district. And it's such a slick trick. You know, the military-industrial complex has got this thing down to an art form. Wayne, thanks a lot for the call. And, speaking the uncomfortable truths that we all really need to know. I appreciate it. It's always great to hear from you, my friend. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Then how do we square this? You know, yesterday the general said, yeah, our guys flying planes, that's combat. We are in combat in Iraq right now. Welcome back. Brenda in Sepulpa, Oklahoma. Am I saying that right?
I'm a little bit of oil and gas, so I was just listening to the last caller talking about constituents and they know somebody, their big thing about not cleaning up or you're voting against jobs. If you vote for solar, somebody that's progressive, then you're voting against jobs, but what I was going to say was creationism versus science. I think that the two really probe each other, mm-hmm. One's a faith thing and the other's a science thing. We just got the science now to prove how God created the world. Whichever God you choose, that's how I believe.
I'm with you. I don't see this as an either or. I think it can be a both. And, every person has to make that decision. But if we're going to raise a generation of scientists who can, once again put a person on the moon or maybe Mars or solve the great problems, cure Ebola, cure HIV, feed the planet. If we're going to raise a generation of people who are science smart, they can't be ignorant about simple stuff like evolution, which is necessary to understanding biology. And
I agree.
So
I agree totally. But the problem is in a state like this where they're voting down education. They repealed Common Core and then didn't have the textbooks. Is if we can keep voters stupid,
yeah,
and not educated, which is something that's easily done now because, but for the grace of God, I found your show and learned more facts. But, it's like pulling teeth to talk to people about it because whatever they see on, the big networks, the media controlled, that's all they see. They don't know any better.
Yeah,
they can't make an educated vote. And when we're looking at a seventh grade average reading level, how can we expect them to make a good vote? And we're, in Oklahoma, they want you even dumber. So you can't. And how can I get this flag? I need this flag.
Oh,
a flag with
we're going to have to.
I need that.
Yeah. Maybe Sue can track it down and we can get one. We can get a link to it on our homepage or something. Let me check into that, Brenda, during the break. Thanks a lot for the call. Kathy, watching Free Speech TV. Kathy, I don't have a city for you. We have a minute to the break. You got a quick comment?
Oh, yeah, just about Obamacare. I had a lot of high hopes for it.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband and I, our income falls where we're going to have to pay a huge deductible, $5,000 a year, $12,500 a year out of pocket. So, and we pay $435 a month for it. Mm-hmm. And so it seems like the insurance kind of just making out like bandits. And it's insurance that we're forced to buy, but we can't afford to use.
Yeah. The insurance companies are making out well. It's a compromise. It's a better compromise than what we had. I mean, now the insurance companies, if you get sick, they can't say to you, sorry, you're sick. We're not going to pay for this. They can't, you know, they used to do that all the time. So there's, you know, there's a lot of good pieces to it, but, you know, yeah, if you want to be disappointed, I'm sorry to hear that. I'm sure that there's a number of people disappointed, and there's probably a large number of people who are paid to call talk shows and say that they're disappointed. Who knows? I doubt that you're in that position. Thank you for the call. We'll be back. Minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, the place where smart people get their news. Jim in Lancaster, Kentucky. Hey, Jim, you wanted to talk about religion?
Yes, sir, Tom. How are you today, sir?
I am great. How about you?
I'm doing pretty well. Thank you. You've got the best show out there, Tom. The level of discourse on this show is just amazing sometimes.
Thank you.
Yeah, a couple of the earlier callers stole a little of my thunder. You know, I was just going to say that some of these fundamentalist religious people, they just feel threatened by science. They don't understand that science does not disprove God. It only puts it on a different level that it's hard for them to understand.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah, I agree. You know, whether you're talking about the science of, you know, the God spot in the brain, you know, how our brain works, or whether you're talking about large scale structures of the universe and the astrophysics. I see, frankly, religion or God or gods or the sacred or the divine, you know, all of that. But, you know, I get it where some people don't, and I don't have a problem with that. Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Well said. Dwight in Alexandria, Louisiana. Hey, Dwight, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Hey, good talking to you, and enjoy the show immensely.
Thank you.
We're going to talk about religion.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to say, if we go back to the most rudimentary form of religion is our American Indians, the original Indians, which mm-hmm. is being erased from history, like the lady from Oklahoma mentioned a few minutes ago.
Yep.
You understand that the Indians understood that the sun god, the god of rain, the god of earth or whatever was part of their existence.
Yeah.
And you take that evolutionary cycle that they lived day in and day out and put it into a religion, you'd understand that we separated what truly religion should be. And that
mm-hmm.
being thankful that both we're able to give thanks for the fact that we have air, wind, sun, rain, and we use them properly.
Yeah.
And put them in proper perspective, rather than looking at a religion that hopes to save the Israelis and prove the existence of religion.
Mm.
And I'll sum it up with that one right there.
Yeah. Well, I think you summed it up really well. Dwight, thank you for the call. Very, very, very thoughtful point. Derek in Pittsburgh. Hey, Derek.
Hey, Tom. I watch you all the time. It's the first time I called.
Thank you.
Hey, I'm sort of a Buddhist. I'll call it like that. I, through my travels, I took some Islamic classes, and they do a little ceremonial thing before they pray five times a day. They wash their hands, their feet, their ears, nose, eyes, you know, their mouth and all that.
Yeah.
And I started doing that, and all of a sudden my athlete's foot cleared up, and I wasn't getting as many colds because I was washing my mouth out five times a day.
There you go.
I'm not religious, but it's become a habit when I get up in the morning. I don't pray, you know. I'm not an atheist. I believe, like you do, that every subatomic particle has imbued in it some energy that came from the source, if I can say it that way.
Yeah, that's how I'd say it.
But
yeah. You know, a lot of religious practices are like that. You know, the Jewish injunction that is now called kosher, that's in Leviticus, I think it is, That you shouldn't eat shellfish. Shellfish are bottom feeders. They're toxin filters. Plus, there's a lot of people who are allergic to them. That you shouldn't eat pork. Pork used to have trichinosis. It could kill you. There are a lot of, quote, religious traditions, end quote, that are actually just good hygiene and good health. It turns out even circumcision, men who are circumcised are less likely to get certain venereal diseases, particularly HIV, although that was not widely extant back, 3,000 years ago. But, there's this whole variety of things that we used to call religious practice. And this is where, religion and science and public health kind of all come together. Derek, excellent.
I think a lot of the religious practices came out of a medicinal purpose.
Yeah.
I felt better when I started practicing it.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I think religion evolved essentially as a way to make sense of the world and to conduct ourselves in the world in a way that maximizes our lifespan and the quality of our lives. It's pretty straightforward. Derek, thank you for the call. Mike in Fairfax, Virginia. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I wanted to talk about perpetual warfare and how it's bleeding America dry. So the Census Bureau is coming out with their 50th anniversary on the war on poverty, and I think it comes out this week. And basically, since LBJ in 64 gave his speech at the State of the Union, we've spent $22 trillion, that does not include Social Security and Medicare, on poverty. And it looks like it's moved about 2.7%. And actually, in the last decade, we've increased spending on poverty and welfare programs, and the rate's gone up.
Yeah.
So I think we need to end these perpetual wars on poverty. And if you took that 20,
wait a minute, can you imagine how bad things would be if we hadn't spent that money? We would be like England in the 18th century. Is that what you want?
Let me ask you a question. What is 22 trillion divided by 300 million?
Well, first of all, I dispute your 22 trillion number. I think that's a bogus number.
That's adjusted for 2012 dollars, and that's in the Census Bureau's report.
Yeah, I don't believe it.
Still there?
Yeah, I don't believe it.
Okay, so then Obama's Census Bureau is lying to us all to cover up some other.
Well, who knows? Let's say it is 22 trillion. Whatever it may be, it is a fraction of our military budget, which is where you started. How our perpetual wars are bleeding us dry. If you want to complain about something, about the expenditure of something, instead of complaining about the fact that we are feeding children, and the vast majority of the recipients of food stamps are children, that we're housing people, and the vast majority of poor people in the United States, one in five children in the United States lives in poverty. And you want to complain about the money we're spending on this? That's not only unreasonable, it's inhuman, or it's at least lacking compassion, shall we say. We have a serious problem with poverty in the United States. It is in large part a problem of capitalism, and it's a problem of Republicans in politics making sure that the rich get richer while the poor get poorer. And we should be doing something about that at a structural level. Now, whether that means we're spending our money wisely or not, that's a reasonable debate. But to come on and say, oh, yeah, there's give me a break. Shane and Danielle are up next. I got to go tape a TV show. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Danielle and Shano, me and Shano sitting in for Tom for the last hour. Tom is off to film his TV show, he said,
yes.
And he will be back tomorrow. So don't fret. And if you are holding, we could still get to all those topics, so don't go anywhere. But before we get back to those calls, we wanted to speak with our friend and perhaps one of the world's most brilliant comedians, John Fugelsang, who has a big announcement. Thank you so much for joining us for a few moments, John.
Hello there. Hi, Shado and Left Neck Chick.
Hey, how you doing?
Both. It's great to talk to you both. Thanks for having me. And, I want the listeners to know that while Shano and Danielle are filling in this hour, Tom is writing and publishing 7 books in 1 hour.
Yes, I think that's about his average rate. So, John,
he's
please...
doing some moonlighting work for the Heritage Foundation.
Yeah, please tell us you are going to have a big event this Friday.
Oh, well, I wanted to let the Tom's listeners know who are in the New York tri-state, upstate New York area, that, we're doing a great political comedy show at the Woodstock Comedy Festival. And if anyone's, you know, in that part of the country, they might not even know that Woodstock has a comedy festival. They do it every year. And we're bringing up a show we do called Comedy Nation, which is a talk show that I started doing in Los Angeles. We've just begun to workshop it in New York City. We're doing one show tonight in New York, which is going to be the very first political comedy show about the 2016 presidential campaign. So if you're in the city, come on down. We're going to have all of our jokes about the candidates, and Mrs. Clinton will not be spared. And then Friday night, we're going up to the Woodstock Festival, and I had to call him in because I know that Tom's audience will appreciate this lineup. The great Lee Camp, who, of course, hosted Moment of Clarity and has his own great show on RT. Ted Alexandro, who's done Letterman a gazillion times, and I spent time at Occupy Wall Street with both of those fine gentlemen. Trayvon Free, who is a 2-time Emmy Award-nominated writer for The Daily Show, and Mike Kaplan, who was on Last Comic Standing, some other very funny people. And we're doing this show where the format is unlike anything you've ever seen. It's every comedian gets up, and each show has one theme. So Woodstock's theme is going to be State of the Union, comedians giving their address on where we're at. Every comic gets up and does a monologue on it, and then I host a very inappropriate panel where the comedian's main job is to make a mockery of the serious discussion I'm trying to run. But with this much talent, you know, there's so many great political comics in America, and it's so hard for them to get on television doing their act. You'll notice that, you know, Letterman and Fallon and Kimmel don't really ever book political comics. So it's really exciting to do a show where the smartest people in the business can get up and be really political, really funny, and let's just say it's an orgy of laughs for the progressive community.
That is an amazing lineup. There are several of my favorites in there, including you, John. For anybody who hasn't had the pleasure of seeing John do stand-up or Lee Camp or several of those other greats that you mentioned, it is something that you absolutely cannot miss. So I want to quickly just remind everybody that's the Woodstock Comedy Festival this Friday. You can go over to John Fugelsang's Twitter account, at John Fugelsang, where I'm sure there will be more links and information. John, thanks for sharing that announcement with us. I wish I was in New York to see it.
I know, me too. But don't worry, you know, if it doesn't go well, I'll just be like Robin Thicke and blame it all on Farrell. So won't be a problem. And by the way, if Dick Cheney is going to go on blaming Obama for what's happening with ISIL, isn't that kind of like Dr. Frankenstein blaming the villagers for not catching that monster yet? I mean, it's just the stuff writes itself. I don't want Dick Cheney and Sarah Palin to ever go away. I hope they are the face of the GOP for the rest of the election season. If the Democrats aren't doing anything to drive people out of the polls, thank God we have Dick Cheney and Sarah Palin motivating people to actually get out there and vote, because not voting is a vote for the Tea Party.
Absolutely. John, you are brilliant. Enjoy every chance I ever get to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Hope to talk to you a lot soon. Take care.
Bye. Absolutely. John Fugelsang, everybody. Go over to either johnfugelsang.com or his Twitter account is at John Fugelsang.
In his Twitter account, you must follow it.
Yes, it is the best.
It is hilarious every single day.
And again, that was the Woodstock Comedy Festival in New York. So I'm sure you could do a search and find more information as well.
It's not far from my hometown.
It is not.
You want to take a road trip?
Well, and I will give a special shout out to Lee Camp there, because he has been very supportive of the Occupy movement.
Yeah.
From day one, and he's done a lot of shows to benefit different Occupy groups. And as one of the callers on the board, do you want to go ahead and jump to this?
Sure.
Zach, listening on Sirius in Los Angeles, mentioned that today is actually the third anniversary of Occupy. Zach, I can't believe I missed that one. Thank you so much for the reminder.
I know. It's kind of disheartening that people are missing this.
It is, and I think in some ways it isn't, that there are so many different political movements going on, like the fast food worker strike and, you know, big, huge comedy shows, political comedy shows like John just mentioned.
A march in New York City this weekend?
The People's Climate March in New York City. Maybe Occupy doesn't need an anniversary. Maybe every day should just be Occupy's anniversary.
I do agree with that in a sense, but, you know, and I guess in the other sense, you know, understanding what caused and spawned all of that, which I completely agree with, but just trying to remember what those people that were beaten and shot at and what they sacrificed for what we now have.
Well, I mean, the same could be said of many groups, but I think I know where you're going. Yeah, it certainly predates Ferguson as a big story of police brutality. What are your thoughts, Zach? What can we do to
keep Occupy alive?
Yeah, keep those ideas alive.
Just keep talking about it. That's to keep people, because that's what got so many people, woke people up and got people involved in, you know, doing so many different things like what you explained, but you just have to keep talking about it.
Well,
remind people that this is, you just can't stop. You know, they don't stop. The other, you know, what I call the Reich Wing, they don't stop, so we can't stop. So
amen to that. And, you know, hey, you just told,
a lot of people.
So hopefully they get out there and support that anniversary in one way or another. But that, Zach, thank you very much for the call. I don't know if it's a coincidence, but today is also Constitution Day.
And it totally took me by surprise.
Right.
I mean, they didn't tell me how many shopping days were until today. I mean, all of a sudden it just came upon us.
There's
no war on Constitution Day. It was a caller yesterday that mentioned it. They're like, oh, we have to do that.
Right.
So happy Constitution Day.
Right. I don't know if Occupy originally intended those days to line up. I think it would be interesting to find out if maybe there was some motivation behind that.
Yeah.
But since 2004 and the passage of an amendment by Senator Robert Burr, September 17th is Constitution Day, formerly known as Citizens Day.
Right. So it's like a civics day.
Right.
I guess there's different curriculum that they're being taught in schools about the Constitution. Something we used to call, I think, civics class.
Yes, I think we used to have entire semesters, entire classes devoted to it. And I don't know that one day is quite enough to cover it. But in addition to getting your thoughts on all the topics that Tom covered, if you're on hold, hang out there. We will get to your calls. But in addition to that, we'd love to get your thoughts on Constitution Day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one, how is it being handled right now? Two, those who are charged under the Constitution, how are they acting? And most importantly, the Constitution, should we be amending it? And this includes, you know, move to amend, but other ways
right.
to amend the Constitution to make it more responsive to what's going on today.
Right.
There are a lot of different ideas out there. We'd love to hear yours.
There are a lot of great ideas. You know, there's ideas on how to change amendments that we're currently aware of and we often disagree about politically. And there could be new ideas. So what are your thoughts?
The Constitution is what we make it.
Exactly.
It's not written in stone.
Exactly. You know, what would you add to the Constitution if you could? How would you change it? I would really love to get the thoughts of Tom's listeners on that because they are the smartest listeners in the world. We've got lots more in store coming up.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
What would you add to the United States Constitution?
Or take
Let
away.
Us know. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Danielle, me, and Shano sitting in for Tom for the last hour. He will be back tomorrow.
And your calls today do not count against your, like, once-a-week calls.
Right. Right. So. You get a do-over, a mulligan, if you will. But there are some great calls. Great people who have been holding since Tom was on the air. So we'll get to some of them now, including Barbara watching Free Speech TV in Auburn, Washington. Barbara, thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Thank you so much. Love you guys.
Well, thank you very much. You had some thoughts on Republicans and women's rights?
Well, you know, our country's going through it again. Women are trying to find their place, and it always seems strange to me that even as I watch the History Channel and they're trying to decide how humans got to Earth, and they are saying that they might have come by spaceship. I don't care how you look at it, women were first. And then if we look at the Bible and everything else we learn, it looks like black women were first. My granddaughter asked me, she said, is God a black woman? I said, where are you getting that from? She said, TV. She said, Nana, it looks like we're always struggling against one kind of people. Whether we're women or black people, we're always struggling against the white structure that wants us to believe that men were first, yet no man gets to earth without a woman. All men are born female or conceived female before that chromosome changes them to a male. Everything points to the fact that God must be a woman. And yet women are still fighting for their rights, while the Republican Party uses their tax dollars in the gazillions to take their rights away. It's as if women are handing their money to the Republican Party, saying, here, you decide who we are, where we come from, how we live, and if we prosper or not. Just one group of people. The blacks fight the white power structure. The women fight it. And it's a fight that doesn't have to be fought because it makes no sense. It makes no sense to anyone. Women are first. Women do give birth to man.
Well, if women, you know, Barbara, I certainly don't disagree. Yeah, I certainly don't disagree with you. But we don't need to have the birds and the bees talk. Obviously, men had to be involved in there somewhere in the creation.
But there is a lot to be said about the white power structure creating this blonde-haired, blue-eyed Jesus.
Oh, absolutely.
That when you actually read the Bible, Jesus had hair of wool. We do know that in terms of evolution, where humans came from, that Jesus was from the Middle East, where you had a darker complexion. So these arguments, have been going on forever, but it's so often that those in power, and usually those in power are those with all the wealth, will dictate to the rest of us the way things are. Those with the money control the story.
Right.
Well, we know it could be, it's far, far different.
Right.
And they love the fact that we're battling amongst ourselves so that we don't talk about unemployment insurance or not going to war or things like that.
I think they do, and I think it's going to backfire on them politically, Barbara. Every time the Republicans vote against women's rights, they don't do so well in the polls. So let's hope that process continues and we can get more equality in general. But thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We really appreciate your call. To the Tom Hartman program, Danielle and Shano, me and Shano, sitting in for Tom for the last hour today. Just a quick reminder, if you're in the D.C. area, come to Busboys and Poets this Sunday at 5 p.m. for a great event with Tom and fellow co-author Dan Sisson about their new book, The American Revolution of 1800.
I cannot wait.
I cannot wait. I'm very excited about that event and the book and to get a chance to listen to what they have to say.
Yeah, it'd be great. Great event.
Absolutely. So Tom has been talking a lot about religion today.
Yeah.
Evolution versus creationism. And I see there's still a lot of people on the board who want to get in on that subject. So without further ado, let's go with Mark listening on Sirius in Pinkerton, Ohio. Mark, thanks for listening to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you very much.
And you had some thoughts on?
I wanted to point out that people who hold a strict interpretation of the Bible actually supports the theory of evolution.
Okay, and I certainly don't disagree, but how so?
So if you believe in the strict interpretation of the Bible, if you just take the story of Noah, if the entire earth flooded and wiped out everybody but who was on that boat, then where did freshwater fish come from?
Well,
the salinity of the entire planet.
Yeah,
why
and
is there no kangaroos in Turkey?
And I think we know what would happen to our own DNA if those were the only people left on the planet as well. I think there's a lot of people who put forward.
So where did every other race on the planet come from if there were only however many people on that boat?
Certainly an interesting point.
Hal Sparks has a great bit on this.
Yes.
That Noah's Ark is just to get kids interested in the Bible because the two giraffe heads sticking out of the boat is the best picture in a children's Bible.
Yes.
You know, of course you can't take it literally. But I don't quite see where evolution comes from there. I think it disproves the fact that you should take the Bible literally. I think that's what you may be saying.
You know, the Puritans came here to, you know, practice their version of Christianity. And, you know, 400 years later, you have people in Congress who are still trying to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, we were talking about the Constitution earlier, and the fact that, you know, it's really hard to update it. And the point I've often brought, kind of to go full circle here with the Bible and how the people in Congress are still teaching the same principles 400 years later, even the Bible was updated, Mark. We still got a New Testament.
Yeah.
So, sorry, go ahead.
No, I agree with you.
Yeah. Hopefully we can do the same with the Constitution. Mark, thanks for listening on Sirius there in Ohio. And let's go with Tony, watching on Free Speech TV. Tony, you had a question for Tom, so we may or may not be able to help you, but you've been waiting a long time, so go ahead. Tony, in Little Lake, California, watching on Free Speech TV?
He probably figured there's no way these two know.
Yeah.
So.
Well, fair enough. So let's go with Tom, watching on Free Speech TV in Libby, Montana, is it, Tom?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, go ahead.
Yes, I want to comment on evolution here. Early humans interbred with Neanderthals in Europe and Western Asia, and the result is that all modern humans outside of Africa have some Neanderthal DNA, between 1% and 4% Neanderthal DNA. And I had my DNA analyzed, and I have about 2.9% Neanderthal DNA. And I would recommend that your listeners would have their DNA analyzed just for the fun of it. It only costs about $100, but it's nice to know how much Neanderthal DNA you have.
That's actually really interesting, Tom. I'd never thought about that, but I have seen some recent articles that that go into that about how Neanderthals.
Yeah, there's one of the Business Insider.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. It says, when Neanderthals and ancient humans hooked up 80,000 years ago.
Great title. Well, I think that's an interesting suggestion, Tom. I think hopefully the price will come down a little bit more to make that more attainable for some people. But there have been some great projects showing how much DNA we all have in common. It's really interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for watching Free Speech TV, Tom. We really appreciate it. And we'll go with, do we have time for another call? With Monty listening on Sirius in Portland, Oregon. Monty, thanks for listening to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I love Tom Hartman. And can you hear me?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Great. Yeah. So as far as religion goes, I was thinking about exegesis or the study of the Bible. And one thing I've noticed as I'm listening to all the different progressive media talk show hosts that I love is that they talk about cherry picking out of the Bible. And I guess it kind of goes with what you just said about the Bible was updated, so to speak, with the New Testament. And I guess that's the way a lot of Christians are taught, is that there's different ways of looking at how God worked in the world at different ages in the world. You know what I'm saying? So in the Old Testament, God worked one way, and then as the New Testament came along, God, you know, has a new dispensation. He's working in a different way. And so that's why the God of the Old Testament can look so different from the God of the New Testament, even though he's the same one. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And you had some thoughts on how Fox News uses that, and we only have about 30 seconds here.
Okay, so I noticed that a lot of media seems to not mention the good portions of what's going on in the Christian world. I noticed that Fox does, and I think they use that specifically as a hook to get the evangelical community on their side and listening to them, because they would, you know, trust Fox more because they use these points. They appear more friendly.
Well, it's an interesting point. We'll have to consider that one after the break. Danielle and Shano here sitting in for Tom.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Do you have thoughts on how we should update the Constitution or any other topic? Give us a call. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Me, Danielle, and Shano sitting in for Tom today. Thanks for hanging out with us in the last hour here that Tom let us fill in. Still have lots of great callers on the board.
Cool.
And I just want to touch again briefly on Constitution Day.
Happy Constitution Day.
Happy Constitution Day.
So it's the day, this is the day, you know, that they got done drafting it and all signed it.
Yes.
This is the anniversary of that.
It is the day the Constitutional Convention signed the Constitution in 1787 in Philadelphia. There's some great...
And then sent it off for ratification and had the debates and all that.
Yeah. There's some great constitutional quizzes and fun stuff like over on the Washington Post and other sites if you want to test your own constitutional recollection.
I would imagine Tom Hartman listeners will score very high because every day is Constitution Day here.
I mean, think you're right.
I mean, we all have one of these. We really do. Right?
Yes, we actually have so many of those. There's duplicates sitting at home.
Yes.
But we enjoy it. And it just begs the question of whether one day is enough to focus on
something against one day. I'm glad we're doing the one day, but, you know, I think we should do it a little more.
I think so, too.
We solve a whole heck of a lot of problems when it comes to our elections.
Yeah.
I believe.
So if you are listening, please, if you have an idea of what you'd like to add to the Constitution, give us a call. The number's 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-THOM. So we will get back to your calls, as this is the portion of the show that Tom usually saves just for you. And we don't want to...
We're not going to stray from tradition here.
Right. So let's go with Chris, listening on Sirius Radio in Darlington, South Carolina. Thanks for listening to Sirius, Chris.
Thanks for taking my call. Now I've got two issues on the Constitution. Rather than amending it, I'd just like to get a movement going to actually ask the Supreme Court justices to actually read the thing before they rule on issues like Citizens United.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent idea.
Over to the corporations.
Maybe we should have them take the Washington Post Constitution Day quiz and go from there. You know, if they can't get 100%, then we'll have them sit down and reread it. Do you think, Chris?
Or maybe the Supreme Court would overrule the quiz results.
The reason I called was, how many people have noticed that there seems to be a correlation on education spending? You know, the less a state spends per pupil on education and the lower they pay teachers, the more likely they are to vote consistently right-wing Republican.
I think there's a lot of issues involved there. I think there are definitely some correlations because red states tend to have lower spending on public education, but it may be a chicken and the egg type of situation where first. Yeah.
But I think a lot of it is the idea that if they keep us ignorant enough, they can keep feeding us doo-doo and telling us it's chocolate.
What a way with words, Chris.
Some words can't go on the radio.
Yes, and we appreciate that. Shane, you had some thoughts?
Well, and perhaps, you know, one of the things that is not in the Constitution is the right to an education. Is that worthwhile? I mean, when we talk about FDR and his second Bill of Rights, a right to an education was in there. Is that something you would think we should put into the Constitution?
Chris?
Works for me.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, works for me, yeah.
All right,
but,
well...
our governor here in South Carolina, what got me thinking about it was, you know, when she was quote, you know, I saw her on TV talking about the need for our schools to train a compliant workforce.
A compliant workforce.
Wow. That you would almost think that that is a Freudian slip, that you know, somebody's speaking a little bit more honestly than they intended to. But Chris, I'm sorry. I accidentally dropped your call. I did exactly what Tom does, and I accidentally hit the button. It was not intentional. Thank you for listening on Sirius, Chris. Please forgive me. So let's see. Let's go with Jim watching on Free Speech TV in Littleton, Colorado. Jim, thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Yeah, I think I have an idea, or one idea.
Okay.
Getting rid of money from politics is to take the House of Representatives and turn it from a two-year term to a four-year term, so they're not out the next day trying to drum up money for their next election.
Hmm.
You know, same thing maybe with the Senate and the presidency, maybe a one-year term of 8 years or something, and then he's and give him Lion-Eye veto back, too, so he's a real president.
Well, that's
but, I was wondering what you thought about increasing terms in the office to keep them from, you know, giving him more time because the government's more complicated.
Right.
And back when the country was formed, it was agricultural, and, you know, the farmers didn't.
Oh, we lose him?
Out there. Still there. Jim, let's get Shano's thoughts on that, because it seems like he has an opinion.
And there were a lot of thoughts of the founders about this. If you think about it, remember, the Senate's 6 years, House is 2 years. The House was supposed to be the people's representative, the ones, the representatives that were the closest to the people. And they had shorter terms, so they were more accountable to the people. Now, in this day and age with money and politics, it goes back there. We do have this perpetual campaign. And that is, I think, what he's getting to, is that as soon as you walk in the door, you are back to campaigning for the next term, and that's an issue. Of course, yes, lengthening terms could do that, but would that also then make them less accountable in that, well, for the first 2 years, I can do whatever I want, you know? More elections, the founders thought, you know, because it's every 2 years, that they would really have to answer often, and therefore be more accountable. So I'm not quite sure. I don't know what you think about that, Danielle.
I think it's an interesting prospect that instead of constantly campaigning, maybe it would free up some time. I would definitely be for it if we included some language that said they actually have to work a certain percentage of the time instead of being able to be on vacation once every 3-4 weeks, actually have to do the people's business that they're elected to do.
But if we went back and took the money out of politics, then that urged the very first day you walk in the door to have to go start raising money and then be only accountable to those giving you the money. That perpetual campaign cycle could be ended by ending all of that money in the politics themselves. And also, you know, the huge amounts of money in politics is a barrier to entry to just everyday people being able to show up and say, I want to run. I want to be in the House of Representatives. If you're not a millionaire, you're already behind.
Right.
You know, getting that money out of there, then you can actually have real debates with actual people who represent real people. And I like the idea of every 2 years, to be honest with you.
But
if we get enough people who want to lengthen it, guess what? We can amend our Constitution.
That's
what this is about.
That is what this is about. Jim, thank you very much for watching Free Speech TV and a very thought-provoking suggestion. And if anybody has any ideas on that, they're welcome to come in and share. But thanks for watching, Jim. Fun fact for you, in relation to what Jim was just talking about, I don't know if most people will know this. Most of us think that under the Constitution, the president is limited to 2 terms, so we think of 8 years.
Right.
But a fun fact for Constitution Day, under the Constitution, the longest a president can serve is actually 10 years.
That's one of the ones I got wrong on that test, and I don't quite understand. If somebody really smart about the Constitution, call in and tell me how you get to 10. Other than assuming the office, you know, from the vice president into president, and then you can do 2 more terms after that.
That would be my thought. My guess is, you know, in the event of emergency, the vice president having to step in and complete a term and then still being eligible, that not counting against one of the terms.
Unless you serve greater than half of that term. So that kind of makes sense. now that I think about it.
Just thought it was an interesting fun
fact. Thanks for explaining that to me, Danielle.
So let's go with Ed watching Free Speech TV in Lincoln, Nebraska. Ed, thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Yeah, thank you.
You had some thoughts.
Yeah, how about instead of, like the last caller said, like, change it to 4 years, why not make the president, the Senate, and the Congress all a six-year term, and they can only serve one term? That would get the money out of politics.
Or
they would have nothing to, you know, continue on after the 6 years. So they could become a senator, and then the senator could become a president, but they only get one six-year term.
So essentially, term limits, but also changing congressional terms. I would certainly worry if they were all up for election at the same time.
Right. And on top of it, Tom often talks about this, the institutional memory of how the Congress works, how legislation is done, how the country's run. That if you have people who are elected, those that are allegedly answerable to us, and if they're constantly recycling through, they never have enough time to build up that institutional memory. And so other people are going to come in and fill that gap. And the people that most often will fill that gap would be lobbyists or staffers who become lobbyists, who then become staffers. And then all of a sudden, the power center of Washington, I mean, it already is, but it would even more rest with those with money. And those who actually aren't elected, non-elected lobbyists with tons of money, would know how things go around here, how they run, and essentially manipulate things and have even more control. So term limits, you know, we have term limits, as we often say here. They're called elections. If we don't like somebody, throw them out, and which we can do. You know, can you imagine? But think to yourself, if we had that, Senator Sanders, you know, you're done. Don't come back. I want Senator Sanders there, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I think the thought, and I'm sure I'm not thinking this through fully, but the thought of people who don't know the procedural process is almost intriguing, because then they wouldn't know how to skirt it and do things like silent filibusters. So maybe then they'd actually have to focus on how government is supposed to run. But Ed, again, thought-provoking topic. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Do you think term-limiting senators, congresspeople, would improve how Congress runs? Welcome back. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Danielle and Shano, me and Shano, sitting in here for Tom for the last few minutes today. So let's go with Arnold, watching on DirecTV in Smyrna, Tennessee. Am I pronouncing that correctly, Arnold? Arnold, watching on Free Speech TV.
My fault. I didn't put Arnold up.
Oh, Arnold.
That was my fault.
Yes, sir.
You're there now. Sorry, Shane forgot to put you up on the board.
My fault. Sorry about that.
Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Go ahead.
Now, is this Arnold or Michael?
Oh, I have Arnold. Is this Michael? Do we have the wrong name in there for you?
No. This is Arnold.
Okay.
A lot of people pronounce that Smyrna, but it's Smyrna is the correct pronunciation.
Okay.
I was calling in, you know, the topic earlier was about evolution, and I was going to ask you if you've ever heard of a book called Thank God for Evolution.
I haven't heard of it. Shane, have you?
I have not, but I love the title.
So what does that book talk about?
It's by a man named, his name is Michael Dowd. And he's a former Baptist minister, and he's married to an atheist. And they travel around the United States talking about his book. I've heard him speak twice, and he has a really good, a program that he goes through. You know, he basically shows how God and evolution can coexist with each other. It's not one or the other. And his book has been endorsed by, I think it was 6 Nobel laureates have endorsed his book.
Well, it certainly sounds like an interesting topic. It's one that...
We had other callers talking about this, that it's not, it doesn't have to be either or. You know?
Right.
And as Tom says, teach science in the science classrooms, you know, comparative religion and the religious class, and they actually are not mutually exclusive. It's not one or the other. You know, it's just don't put creationism in the science class any more than you're going to put science in the comparative religion class. And they absolutely, it's this book, I've looked it up here, it's about the marriage of the two, and it's a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Well, thank you very much for the suggestion, Arnold. I'll have to check it out. It sounds intriguing. Thank God for Evolution by Michael Dowd. I will write that down momentarily. Thank you so much for the thought. So,
could I put in a plug for a book that I wrote?
Sure.
Okay. The book is entitled Divine 9/11 Intervention, A True Story. And you can find it at lovegodislove.org. That's one word, lovegodislove.org.
All right.
It's just a true story about some experiences I had, and I felt like I ought to share it. And the book is free. There's no charge.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that, Arnold, and hopefully people will check it out.
Only have about 50 seconds. That would not be fair to anyone.
Not be fair? All right. Well, great topics today. It's always so much fun. I have the pleasure of speaking with Tom's listeners day in and day out, and I have to say I learn something every day. I learn amazing things, and when Tom says the smartest listeners in the world, he isn't kidding. And hopefully you guys enjoy listening to these great calls as much as I do on a day-to-day basis. So we're going to come back with even more of your calls, your thoughts, here on the Tom Hartman Program. Stick around. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Me and Shano sitting in for Tom for the last hour today. We also host our own show. It's called Talking Left, and you can check it out at talkingleft.com if you are so inclined. But we're answering your calls now about religion and evolution and the Constitution and all kinds of great topics. So let's go with Tony, watching on Free Speech TV in South Windsor, Connecticut. Tony, thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Well, thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Well, I know that a lot of people are talking about term limits for the Congress and the Senate and all. But the real solution for the whole House problem is evening out the representation in government. You know that Wyoming is a marker. It's the smallest state in the union. Their representative represents a lot fewer constituents than they do in, like, California and Arizona. The number of House seats is by fiat, not by Constitution at all. And, you know, all they would have to do is base the size of a congressional district on the basis of the smallest state, which now is Wyoming, and they would add about 100 seats in states like New York and California and Florida, where there's more the even out the representation.
Tony, and I'm just to play devil's advocate here. Don't you think that might give certain states like Florida, New York, California a lot more power in the House of Representatives than other states? And whether or not that's a good idea?
Well, they already do have
true
the larger seats. It would be a good idea because everybody would be equally represented. If you look at, like, the silly maps that they like to put out with blue and red counties and things like that, it's all because of, you know, population distribution. If you went and you started, using the actual population size as a marker for how big a congressional district is, then you would see a much bluer country.
Yeah, you may also have a better chance of actually speaking with and communicating with your representatives, getting representatives that are actually responsive. Shane, you were saying you agreed?
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt. Right now, you have a Congress that doesn't – it's the House of Representatives, but don't represent us because of – I mean, what you're talking about. But also, when it comes to gerrymandering is insane. And so we have political lines being drawn – for the benefit of parties rather than the benefits of a person actually representing us in Washington. And so how the representatives are allocated, The Constitution does point out how many representatives per person. I was trying to find it, but I did not just now. But actually having that ratio would be a great start in getting rid of the gerrymandering to have a more representative and more, therefore more answerable Congress would be a huge step in the right direction.
Yeah. Hey, I've had some representatives that I have to say I had a hard time ever getting a response more than a, form letter email. So I think it's intriguing, Tony. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Let's go with Mary, listening on KABQ in Albuquerque. Mary, thanks for listening to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you for having me on. I wanted to point out that the Noah story was previously recorded in the Chronicle of Gilgamesh. I've read that. The ark was square, 9 stories. The most important thing they were told to take was seeds to replant. But I think that many of the Old Testament stories were borrowed from Babylonian literature. As a matter of fact, I heard something in the past 10 days on a coast-to-coast program. The guy postulated that Moses perhaps just translated the cuneiform tablets, a lot of what was written on there, into stories that we see in Genesis. And it makes sense because Abraham came out of Iraq. There's even a story that I read about a man being formed of clay but held together with the blood of a god, and in a garden. I think I've even heard, although I haven't made a comparison, that perhaps quite a few of the Ten Commandments come from the Code of Hammurabi. I just wanted to say that. And as far as the Constitution, if I could make a change, I would put term limits on the Supreme Court.
Yes.
20 years max. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point.
Actually, when you and I were talking about
right on the money, that was what we suggested in personal conversation. But Mary, thanks for listening on KABQ. And I think there are so many similarities between religious stories that just shows how much we really do have in common.
Yes.
But let's go with one last one. Christine, watching on Free Speech TV on the Dish Network in Mayport, Pennsylvania. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV, Christine.
Hi. I've been thinking about the letters GOP. And whenever I speak to Senator Toomey, his office, they really get agitated whenever I mention that my thought for GOP is greedy old propagandist. And, it really explains it all.
I've heard a lot of good acronyms for GOP and some that we probably couldn't say on the radio. How much?
30 seconds.
In the few seconds we have left, Christine, do you have a couple words about why you came up with or why you think that's the correct acronym?
Well, I just feel like the party is all about the money. It's all about corporations. It's all about the corporation's story of how things should go and making money for the corporations. And as they make money for the corporations, they make money for their own reelection campaigns.
Yep. Well, and that brings us back to one of the biggest drives for a constitutional amendment, and that is to overturn Citizens United. But thanks for watching Free Speech TV, Christine, and thank you guys for hanging out with us for the last hour. Tom will be back tomorrow, so don't go anywhere. Get involved. Get out there. Get active. It's Constitution Day. We'll be back tomorrow.
Listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.